Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hey, thanks for tuning into the Shame-Free Zone. This is Veronica Monet, and it's Thursday, the 26th of March. I think I got the wrong date. Anyway, I may not know what day it is, but I guarantee I know who my guest is. Actually, it is the 26th of March. Oh, my damn. Got something right for a change. My guest tonight is my good friend, Paul August. He's calling me from North San Juan in Northern California. Paul, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm out here in the boondocks of North San Juan, population 125.
Oh, it is not. Is it really 125?
That's what the sign says, the little population sign is to go into the town limits, you know? And
yeah,
every year
I've driven through there now. I know there's a couple horses. Are they counting them?
the county tries to update it with the Census Bureau. There's really about 2,500 people in the vicinity of that 70 square mile area. But every time the county tries to update it to the true population figure, there's these little Tommy knockers that go in there and they put the figure right back to 125. It ain't me, and I don't know who does it, but I laugh like crazy, you know.
That's funny. I guess they got like some kind of a budget or something. They only get it if they have 125 people.
No, they just like to be, think of themselves, or we like to think of ourselves as being isolated and country and away from progress and away from society and away from housing developments and industry and, you know, all that type of stuff.
Well, now I know you got a battery of questions for me, but before you put me in the hot seat, I got a question or two for you. I was actually
sure.
In North San Juan today, mailing some books. You know, my book, Sex Secrets of Escorts. Somebody wanted me to ship one out to Connecticut, and another one was going out to Massachusetts. And I stopped in at the North San Juan mailbox or post office, and I was looking at the bulletin board there, and then they got another bulletin board over at the community center. You know, it looks like anybody can post stuff. I was thinking about
putting
they got
one at the dumps, too.
Huh?
They got one at the dumps, too, a bulletin board.
Oh, yay. I don't want to know about the dumps. But I was thinking about putting my brochures, you know, my brochures about relationship repair. Now,
sure.
It does mention the word sex a couple of times. What do you think? You think this would scandalize the little town of North San Juan?
Well, you know, that type of material would go over better in what's called the San Juan Ridge, and that's kind of the east of North San Juan. North San Juan is kind of old school, traditional, you know, gentrification, I don't know, older folks. But up on the ridge, to give you an idea, they once had a women's pagan spiritual rite or something. I don't know. It was women who were celebrating life, and it was all women singers with their guitar and singing. And on stage came about 20 of these women, and two of them were topless, you know. And it took me by surprise. I mean, and they were celebrating womanhood and all this. So I guess what I'm saying is up there at the North Columbia Schoolhouse and probably, well, in that general vicinity, they very much would welcome sexuality and all the related topics there. You know, North San Juan itself is a little conservative, but they believe in free speech. All of them do. So put those brochures wherever you want to.
Well, thank you. I think I'm going to do that. I was thinking, you know, this, they must need some help with relationship drama in their sex lives, even in a little town like that, or maybe especially in a town like that. Who knows?
Yeah,
I grew up in a very, very small town up in Oregon, and, you know, people are in small towns can be really, really shy about talking about things like that. But I don't think it's so much that they don't find it interesting as they have learned to be really guarded about letting their neighbors know about their personal business. What do you think?
There's a strong conservative streak, not just North San Juan, but this area of Nevada County, Grass Valley, Nevada City. Nevada City is kind of progressive, but Grass Valley is kind of regressive. I don't know if you're familiar with the case where a counselor was accused of giving a 12-year-old girl a pregnancy test. Something like that, you know. Gee, the father went to some group and the conservative side of the ACLU or something, I don't know who they were, and they're suing the school district because this counselor either did or tried to supposedly give their little daughter a pregnancy test. Now, I think it's out of line. I don't think there's any room in education, public education, to do anything like that. But it sort of could have been handled, you know, on the side and not made a great big issue. So there's a strong conservative Rush Limbaugh type around here, you know, where I am.
Well, you're not that kind of guy, so why would you move to a small town like that?
Well, I sort of inherited the place. Grandpa was up here in 1946 and settled here, and then the parents were here for a while, and then I retired and came up here, and it's beautiful. I mean, I spent 30 years working in public education in the Bay Area, looking forward to the time that I could, you know, retire in North San Juan. At that time, in the old days, they didn't have the polarity of the politics. I mean, it was just folks living in North San Juan. Now it reflects the polarity in society, you know, but I love it up here. I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah. Well, as you know, I have a place in Nevada City, and I think it's gorgeous up here. I don't mind the fact that, you know, I have to kind of deal with some of the conservatism.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, sometimes, but that's because I travel around. I travel around a lot, and I get to see other parts of the country where people are a little more liberal, so I don't feel like I'm missing out on anything, you know?
You probably see both. I guess the nature of your speaking engagements, you would see the more liberal side of the culture there, but, boy, there are a lot of these conservative folks out there, too. There's something when I encounter them, I have to watch what I'm saying.
It just depends on what college they bring me into. And colleges have like their own cultures. Like at Stanford University, I was speaking for Philip Zimbardo. You know, he's a famous psychologist that did those prison experiments. And it was recently an expert witness for the Abu Ghraib trials. He's got a brand new book out about torture. I think it's called The Lucifer Effect. Anyway, I spoke for his class, and one-third of the students were Christian and virgins. And what was fascinating about that is, you know, I walked in there as a former escort I brought a briefcase full of sex toys. I even modeled a strap. I even modeled a strap-on dildo for the entire class of 200, and they loved
you
me.
You did. Wish I was there.
How you put on a strap-on dildo?
That's funny.
So it's very, very warm reception by a group of people that you might have thought would have been conservative, because they self-identified as Christian virgins. Turn around, go to New England College. I speak there. And I'm getting protested by the Republicans and the feminists.
Really?
Yes, they're very upset because their college was paying a prostitute. And I'm like, but I'm just talking.
Gee,
yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah, you know, I was just out at Yale University, and they had me out there, flew me out there just to talk for 15 minutes, if you can believe that. And I gave a presentation about your sexual bill of rights. You know, my basic premise is that we don't have a sexual bill of rights here in the United States, which is kind of odd because we've got a bill of rights that protects darn near anything else, but not our private sex lives. So, and they just loved me. They were all these, you know, law students, and they call themselves rebellious lawyers. So I really had a very liberal audience.
Yeah, I saw it on, you sent out your newsletter and it says something about, you know, a little video of you at Yale. The video wasn't clear, but I just used it to listen while I was doing some other emailing. It was really good. I liked it.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah,
really,
it's horrible. You can't see anything, but the sound's good.
Yeah, the sound is good. I mean, it was very clear, everything you're saying. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, look, let me ask you something as long as I'm here to ask some questions, okay?
Well,
you said something about...
Go ahead.
Huh?
Bring it on.
Okay, you talked about your bag of sex toys, and I'm just wondering, what is in your bag of sex toys? Because the first time when I was sort of young and naive, and maybe I'm not so young anymore, but when I went to one of these leather shops in San Francisco and I saw some of these sex gadgets, some of them, I couldn't figure out how they could be used for anything. You know, I mean, it was really amazing. So I'm just wondering what you told me.
You really do need to get an education to use a lot of them. And the thing is that, you know, what I like about teaching people is that I'm not just like saying, okay, I read the instructions. Or you could do that. Like if you buy a box of condoms, they have the little flyer in it that tells you how to put a condom on. It's terrible. That's a terrible way to learn sex. You know, that's like trying to learn how to play tennis by reading a book.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and
you recommend learn by doing.
Yeah, people mostly learn about sex by reading about it, and then they go fumble around in the dark. Well, first of all, I'd say turn the lights on. And then second of all, you know, books are great up to a point, but it's never going to get you to where you want to be. And we aren't really born knowing how to do this stuff normally. I think I've said this joke to you before, Paul, but, you know, even my dog wasn't born knowing how to have sex. First time he tried to have sex, it was just ridiculous. He kept trying to, he was mated to a female shepherd who had been fixed, so they couldn't have puppies, but she still went into heat. He was fixed, I should say. She still would go into heat. He had no idea where anything was or where it was supposed to go. Or what to do with it once you found. I mean, he just was completely dumbfounded. He eventually figured it out.
Oh, yeah.
It took him probably 6 months to figure it out.
Yeah,
so it's interesting, the expectations that we have on human beings. Like, oh, well, you know, it just comes natural. You'll figure it out. Well, some people never do.
Right.
Some people never do. That's why I have a job. You know, I like teaching people this stuff. But okay, so what's in my briefcase? I have got anal beads. Do you know what anal beads are?
Well, let's stop right there. I kind of know what anal beads are, and I know sort of like where they go, it seems. But what is there an erogenous? There's an erogenous zone in there somewhere, right? I mean,
the sphincter muscle, which is, you know, it's that little thing that puckers up on your ass. that sphincter muscle has more nerve endings in it than just about any part of your body.
Mm.
So it's super sensitive. Super sensitive. And there's an erotic sensation about putting something in it and taking something out of it. And with anal beads, you put one bead in at a time. So that can create a certain amount of pleasure. And then when you yank it out, you can do it nice and slow, or you can do it really hard and fast. And it, you know, everybody to each their own. You kind of have to figure out which way you like it. It may not even be your cup of tea. But for some people, that's a highly erotic thing to do, and it's a little taboo.
What if a bead gets stuck in there somewhere? I mean, aren't there cases of people doing things like this and ending up in the ER or something like that?
The rectum is a very dangerous spot. You've got to really, this is an area where you need to get education. You don't want to just experiment. Every year, the emergency rooms and hospitals across the United States are full of people trying to get things extricated from their rectums.
Oh, no. Yeah. That sounds terrible.
I mean, ridiculous things. One guy put an egg beater up there.
Oh God!
Yeah, I don't know what would possess somebody to do that, but
maybe he thought that was a way to do beating off or something like that. He didn't understand the instructions.
That's good, Paul. That's good. It's beating off. Beating off with an egg beater. Well,
yeah.
I guess it's really embarrassing to go to the emergency room with stuff stuck up your butt. But the problem is that, you know, this is part of your alimentary canal. This is a digestive tract. And so it has something called peristalsis, which is an autonomic response of movement. And if you put something into your rectum, the body will start moving it, and it could move it right up and further up inside of you instead of out. If it moves it further up inside of you, it can create something called an obstruction, and you can actually kill yourself.
Oh, great. Jesus.
Yes. So the number one rule is that anything that goes up your butt needs to have something attached to it. So butt plugs, these are dildos made for your rectum, have a phalange on them so that they cannot get sucked up inside of you.
Oh, yeah, I've seen the difference.
Yeah, anal beads are the same way. They have got like a little ring on the end that's too large for you to suck up inside of you. Although, in all fairness, I have seen some rectums that could suck anything up. I have, I'm sorry, but...
Conjuring up evil images here, I swear.
Well, these are very well-practiced rectums. Maybe a little too well-practiced. There's nothing like a guy who shows up at your office and says, I've never done this sort of thing before, and as soon as he drops his drawers, you like think, that looks like a freeway to me, buddy. But I'll play along. So this is your first time, huh? Anyway, all kidding aside, for men, anal stimulation is especially potent because of the prostate, which is, you know, about an inch and a half, 2.5 inches up inside the rectum is the prostate gland. And any kind of rubbing against that can be very erotic for most males. Yeah.
And going back to the vibrator, you made the distinction between like the vibrator and the butt plug, and I think I read somewhere about those vibrators is if somebody's using that in the butt and it goes in, it doesn't come out, you know.
Exactly.
I mean,
and again, they make vibrators that you can use back there, but it needs to have a phalange on it. It needs to be specifically for anal stimulation.
If it's not,
then you run the risk of either a trip to the hospital or severe damage or death. So you really got to take it seriously. The rectum not only has this peristalsis, which causes things to move, but it also is full of these little cilia, which are they're like microscopic parts of your body that absorb. So you're going to be like sucking whatever you put up in there is either going to get sucked up the rectum or it's going to get sucked into the tissue and into your bloodstream. So, you know, I usually joke that putting anything up your rectum is pretty much like injecting it into your bloodstream. Therefore, if you're going to have anal sex, you really, really need to use a condom. And, of course, that means you got to use lubrication because you don't want the condom to break. And the problem with using lubrication is you got to make sure that it's not oil-based because that would degrade the latex. The other thing is that that kind of lubrication is going to get absorbed really quickly, so you got to keep reapplying it over and over again.
Mm.
Yeah, and you are absolutely going to tear the walls of the rectum. It will make microscopic tears. Even if you don't see any blood, you're still going to make tears, which means you've got a really, really good opportunity for transmitting disease.
Yeah, I was going to say, if it tears, then there's blood, and the blood contact creates the possibility for HIV and all that stuff, right?
It does, as far as the person who's penetrating, but the person who's being penetrated is running a risk, even if they don't see blood, because there's these microscopic tears, and the ejaculate is only less potent than blood. the two most potent carriers of HIV are blood and sperm. Well, not sperm, but, you know, ejaculate, male ejaculate.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's you know, all laughing aside, you have to, anytime you're going to do anal play, you really need to be very careful and educated about what you're doing. And I find it very concerning because anal sex has become like a handshake for a lot of 20-somethings.
Really?
They're doing
Why?
It on the first, they're doing it on the first date.
I know,
anal sex was something you did with a boyfriend. Once you got serious, and you maybe got a little bored with doing vaginal sex, so you wanted to branch out and try something new. that's kind of like, hi, I'd love to go out with you. How was dinner? Great, let's have some anal sex.
Oh, jeez.
I don't know. To me, that's just crazy. But, you know, I mean, as long as everybody knows what they're doing, that's great. But unfortunately, a lot of people don't. They just see it. They see unprotected anal sex in the pornos, and they think that's how it's done.
Honestly, yeah.
So you asked me. You asked me about that briefcase. I've got anal beads. I've got a butt plug, which is a little shorty, small thing. It's kind of like a way to, you know, experiment when you're not sure you really want to stick anything up there. I've got a dildo that's made for anal penetration, and it's probably about 6 inches long and only about an inch in diameter, so it's very non-threatening. I've got a strap-on dildo, which is much bigger. It's probably a good, I don't know, 9 inches and an inch and a half or 2 inches around. And what else? Oh, I've got a cat of nine tails, which is, you know, a whip. It's a type of leather whip.
Oh, is that the type that has something at the end of it or something like that?
Mine doesn't have any barbs at the end. It's just leather straps.
Barbs.
Yeah. They certainly do make them where they have little barbs at the end. I don't know. I haven't seen a lot of people who are into BDSM playing with anything that has barbs at the end. I usually associate that more with movies about monks flagellating themselves in the name of the Lord. You could thank the Christians for a lot of BDSM. They kind of perfected that and invented a lot of torture.
Well, that's funny. I never thought of that. Is that the reason why the Franciscan priests that I had in high school would wear the brown robes, but they had these rope with knots on them? Was that part of
it? Makes me wonder, doesn't it? I don't know. I don't know a lot about Franciscans, but I do know that if you go to the castles in England, you go downstairs into the dungeon, it's just like one torture device after another. They really perfected that stuff. Remember, there was one that was, it was a cage you'd put over your wife's head, and it had a piece of metal that stuck into the mouth so she couldn't talk.
Oh, God.
I know. I found touring castles in England to be very depressing.
Okay.
No joy in that at all. So I was really on a goddess tour. We're looking for goddess sites, and that was much happier. You know, the goddess sites were shaped like vulvas and women's breasts and women's pregnant bellies. And people had spent years just making mountains. You know, they'd literally use deer antlers to scrape the dirt up into the shape of a woman's pregnant belly.
That's amazing.
I found that to be much more life-affirming. And those
dungeons, a little more positive,
dark dungeons with all their sexual shame. I personally think that's what we did with the happy sex, is we put it in the bottom of the dirty dungeon. I mean, you think about I always forget, you probably know how to say this, but the book, it's Latin for the hammer, and it is Malthus something or another. Anyway, the Catholic Church came out with a huge, huge book about how to torture witches.
Really?
Yes. Yes. I thought maybe you had heard about that, and you'd tell me more about it. But anyway, okay, so you have it.
I missed that one.
oftentimes, it was all based around sex. So they would accuse the witches of having sex with the devil. And then they would try to get them to confess. And, of course, they used a lot of the techniques we were using in Albert Grave, like waterboarding, you know.
Honest to God, really?
Yeah.
Amazing.
You know? So it's interesting to me. I think that's what we did with our sex. We got very ashamed of it and then turned into torturing other people for being sexual. But the torture took on sexual dimensions that, kind of became another way of having sex without going to hell. Isn't that ironic?
Yeah, the Catholic
check it with my listeners. If you happen to be tuning in, we're just having fun here. We'll talk about anything you want to talk about tonight. My guest tonight is Paul August. He's a good friend of mine, and he's got some questions for me, but I welcome your questions too. And we've talked about everything from torturing witches to small town sexual shame. So give us a call and toll free here at 888-228-4494. That's 888-228-4494. Or you can Skype me on Veronica Monet. That's my Skype ID. And you can also go to Twitter. And my ID over on Twitter is Veronica Monet. And send me a message there, and we'll see if we can't read it on the air. Okay. So, Paul, you were asking me about what all is in the briefcase.
Yeah.
There's, dental dams. You've probably heard of those, right?
Yeah, I've heard of them. And I guess that's like safe sex, oral anal or something like that. I don't know.
Yes. Both. Very good. So if you want to go down on somebody's vagina or their rectum, using a dental dam protects you from getting any of the fluids in your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing you have to do is be careful that you are using the right side of it. So it's like a little square of latex, and they call it a dental dam because it's exactly what dentists use when they're doing oral surgery. They'll use this little piece of latex to try to protect the area that they're operating on so that saliva doesn't get in there. And they use it as a barrier that way. So people start using this in order to perform cunnilingus on women, and then also to do rimming on somebody's rectum, which is where you are using your tongue to stimulate the rectum. A lot of people think that this little piece of latex is actually going to diminish the amount of pleasure that you experience. And it's actually just the reverse. It's very interesting how much pleasure you can feel through that latex. I have found that it's a totally different sensation. Sometimes it can actually be a little more intense, especially if you put lubrication on the side of the dental dam that's facing your rectum or your vulva. Mm. But, of course, if you're the person who is performing the cunnilingus or the rimming, you are not going to get to taste. And for some people, that is a big deterrent because they want to taste. What do you think, Paul? Is it better to taste or not to taste?
Well, is there a danger in these bodily fluids, like, for example, from the vagina? I mean, if a person is going down on a vagina, which is secreting bodily fluids, is there something wrong with that, I guess?
The correct answer is yes, but let me tell you about all the research that we have around this. Basically, there's no confirmed cases of HIV being spread from woman to woman unless there were blood products. So, two instances. We've had instances where lesbians were sharing IV needles, and then they were able to give each other AIDS. And then, of course, going down on each other during your period, well, there's blood there, right?
Oh, jeez.
So, and blood is a very, very potent transmitter of HIV virus. So, yes, I would not recommend it. But on the other hand, if you were given a choice between giving a blowjob to a man without protection or performing cunnilingus on a woman without protection as long as she's not on her period. There is less of the HIV virus in vaginal secretions than there is in male ejaculate.
And
we're really talking about concentrations here, because the fact of the matter is there's a little bit of HIV in saliva and tears and sweat, but we don't protect ourselves against any of those because it's just not in concentrations strong enough to infect.
So if you're
looking at it that way, it's like, yeah, it's okay to drink out of the same glass with somebody who's HIV positive, but you don't want to share toothbrushes or razor blades, because all of those can carry little tiny microscopic bits of blood. So be the safest thing you can do is stay home and jerk off to online porn. It's the safest thing you can do.
Once you start
touching another human being, even if you're not touching their genitals, you run the risk of contracting herpes, because people can get the herpes virus anywhere on their body. And if not that, they can have shingles, which is another herpes type of virus, even though they don't call it herpes.
Oh, really?
Still from the same family. So touching, and then there's genital warts, which you can also contract from touching. So touching carries some risk, but none of them are going to kill you. The one that kills you is really about secretions, genital secretions and blood.
Okay, yeah. And blood seems to be the most potent.
Let's see, what else is in that kit? I have a vibrating egg. A little vibrating egg. You know, it looks like an egg. It's got a string attached to it. It's actually a little wire that runs to a little control so that you can turn it on, and it vibrates up inside a woman's vagina. You could presumably put it up your rectum. I personally wouldn't recommend it because of the fact that there's this little cord to it, and it could possibly, move a little too far up inside of you. It's not really constructed for anal stimulation, but it does have something at the end of it, which... hopefully we keep it from traveling too far.
God's sake.
Handcuffs, have you ever played with handcuffs?
Oh, handcuffs. Are they real handcuffs? I mean, or are they these fluffy little velvet?
I made a mistake. In the beginning of my career as an escort, I used these handcuffs, these novelty handcuffs that you can buy at a costume shop. And the unfortunate thing about them is that when you snap them on, they don't actually stop. You could continuously push them so that they would cut into the person's flesh.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So, but I was using these for years, oblivious to the danger and risk that I was running for my clients. And eventually I picked up these leather padded, beautiful handcuffs. They're not fluffy and pink, and there's nothing pretty about them. They're just, I think they're gorgeous because they're beautiful black leather. And they do have, like, the sheared lamb's wool on the inside, which makes them feel soft. But, they're all very, very rugged because they're made out of leather. And they got big, big, shiny stainless, metal buckles on them. I don't know if it's stainless steel or what, but...
Let me ask you this about the handcuffs. If they were authentic police authority-issued handcuffs, would it be legal for any citizen to own those types of handcuffs? And if it's illegal, then would these fluffy little handcuffs be illegal?
Well, that's a very good question. I don't think anybody's ever asked that before from me.
Good.
I haven't done that research. I'm assuming that the answer is that anytime you have official police issue paraphernalia, that it's illegal because of the fact that it can be construed as you trying to impersonate a officer.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they include the handcuffs in that or not. Certainly a uniform, a badge, anything like that is going to be against the law, just because they don't want you impersonating. But you can go to any store in San Francisco or Seattle, or I'm pretty sure they even have them in Miami. I was just there last May, and they got the whole thing. You know, they got all kinds of different handcuffs.
Okay, so they must be they probably call them wrist restraints, right?
They would have to be legal.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, cool. Let me ask you one more.
You got the dog collars and the leashes and the handcuffs and the rope and the whips and the chains, all kinds of ways of restraining and torturing your loved one.
Let me see. I remember something you had in your book or somewhere I got it from you. It's like, if I got to get this right, sex without consent is rape or something. I know I'm going to mess this up, but pain with consent is sex, something like that, right?
Yeah, and right, exactly. When you're administering pain with consent, that is sex.
Yeah, it's just consensual, sure, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, and if you haven't ever experienced it, being on both sides of it, you know, I have both administered pain and I've had it done to me, much more of the former. I've never advertised myself as a dominatrix, but I certainly have done lots and lots of sessions with clients that were geared towards creating physical harm to them, which they paid me handsomely to do and loved every minute of it. So, and in the beginning, frankly, since I'd never been on the receiving end of it, I really couldn't understand it, you know. But I did eventually build an erotic relationship with that, and I realized that it would really get my testosterone and my adrenaline going, and I would find it to be quite a high to torture my clients. But it's interesting because it's not the it's this combination of feeling very powerful and also seeing how much pleasure you're creating for them. So if at any point the person that is subbing to you, that's being your submissive, isn't enjoying it, if at any point they actually stop enjoying it, your ability to enjoy doing it as a top is completely compromised.
Right. Plus, they are really in control in terms of consent. If they don't consent, then they don't submit, that type of stuff, right?
And then for me, as far as I'm concerned, if you really are a top and not some kind of a criminal, if you're a criminal, then I guess you enjoy hurting people whether they enjoy it or not. But if you're what we call a top, which is somebody who enjoys the dominant position in a sexual scenario, then you are not going to have fun if your partner has stopped having fun. It's not going to be enjoyable for you.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, because the pleasure is tied to this dance. We're all doing power dances. This is, you know, people do this all the time. We have hierarchies in our, our social structure, and we have expectations about behavior, and people submit to that on some level and tend to enjoy that on some level. And so in BDSM, it's like you're just taking that to a higher art form, and you're eroticizing it. And it might be a master-slave scenario. It might be that you're just like dressing up and pretending to be different people, putting on costumes. It could just be what we call like a little vanilla slap and tickle, but it's still a part of BDSM. If you are whacking your partner on their rear end during doggy style sex, you're engaging in a little bit of BDSM.
Did you say that you did some of the other end? I mean, were you on the submissive end? Did you get a good spanking or something like that?
I did. A beautiful dominatrix up in Seattle by the name of Mistress Matisse. She bound me. I'm down in her dark dungeon. And I just had finished I was basically apprenticing to her, learning how to do a certain form of blood sport. And now that's sounds really intimidating. The first time I heard blood sport, I'm like, you can count me out. I don't even like
the
sight of blood.
Yeah, that sounds sinister. Holy smokes.
But it involved piercing somebody's nipples with these very, very small needles, which hardly leave any blood at all. If you were ever a kid who stuck a safety pin in your thumb, I don't know if you ever did that. When I was a kid, I learned how to, take that safety pin and just prick the first layer of skin so there wasn't any blood.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could run around with a safety pin in your thumb.
Gross everybody out.
Yeah, I know. You gross everybody out. Well, this is just a little more advanced than that because you actually are going into the flesh. You're going beneath the skin. But it's such a fine needle that oftentimes you can do it without there being any blood at all. And sometimes there's a little bit of blood. But so you insert these needles into the nipple and then, or right around the nipple, like in the areola area, and then right at the point where this person is getting ready to have an orgasm, you yank them out.
Oh,
yeah. And I know it sounds horrible, but it's amazing how high everybody can get off on that. Here's the thing about pain. It releases endorphins, and endorphins get you high. So people who pursue pain for sexual pleasure are actually pursuing pleasure that looks like pain to other people.
Their pain is really their pleasure.
It is. It is. And if you've actually experienced it firsthand, then you'll understand it's actually very pleasurable. It's just a different kind of pleasure.
I guess.
Different kind of pleasure, that's all. Yeah, so after I had done this, I mean, this is a wild ride, right? I'm being dominant, I'm doing my first blood sport, and then she binds me with rope, and they do it really tight so that you have a little trouble breathing, that you could breathe. But it just, feel constrained, so you can almost start to get a little claustrophobic. And then she blindfolded me, and then she put me on my knees, and, in a dungeon you have all these great props. They've got chairs and benches and tables and all kinds of stuff. So she bent me over something on my knees and then gave me a whipping I think she used a riding crop.
Ow.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, the first couple of whacks hurt, and then you go into this zone. It's amazing. It's better than meditation.
I never heard that before.
Yeah,
certainly different.
I think everything's meditation or spiritual something or another.
No, that's cool.
Let me check in with our listeners again. You're listening to The Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet. My guest tonight is Paul August. He's calling us from the little town of North San Juan in Northern California. And if you'd like to join our fun, give us a call at 888-228-4494. Or you can Skype me at Veronica Monet. And you can also contact me on Twitter at Veronica Monet, M-O-N-E-T. Okay. So what else, Paul? I know you wanted to give me a hard time tonight. What's on your mind?
Well, different thing, but I want to pursue your sex toy kit a little more. Something as simple as a gag. Now, I read somewhere that, I read about sex, but somewhere, I thought that if you just gag someone, that's a safe thing to do and everything, but there was apparently a case, maybe more than one of, somebody being gagged and then they're drunk or something, and then whoever's doing it, they leave the room, and then this person who's gagged, they get sick, they vomit, but they're gagged in such a way that the vomit has nowhere to go, and so they suffocate on their own vomit, and it seems like an apparently simple, safe sex toy can lead to a person's death if it's done wrong,
Well, and I mean, this is the whole thing. If you know what you're doing and you want to put something on the stove and cook it, it's perfectly safe. But if you leave it on the stove too long, you can burn the whole house down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting.
And I'm sorry, I'm always looking for really, mundane examples when it comes to sex, because I want people to stop getting terrified of sex per se. You know, it's really no different than other aspects of life. It's, you know, same thing with driving. If you don't wear your seatbelt, you might, you know, die in a car wreck. If you don't put the emergency brake on, the thing could roll over you if you get out, which, you know, has happened to people. All kinds of things can happen. So, yes, it is an innocuous sex toy, and it's a perfectly safe behavior. But if you're not, you know, treating it with the kind of respect that we need to do for potentially dangerous things, then, yeah, you can run into trouble. Anytime you mix drugs and alcohol and BDSM, you're asking for trouble. So, and the reason that I say that is because of the fact that there's three bylaws when it comes to BDSM. You want it safe, sane, and consensual. Well, safe means that you need to be educated and you need to know how to do the particular BDSM behavior that you're trying to do. So, like for me, you know, using the wrong handcuffs, the big mistake, you know, I could have cut people's circulation off. I had done some cock and ball torture where I was twisting people's testicles around, and I didn't realize that I could actually sterilize them if I collapsed the vas deferens.
And ouch.
I mean, so if you're ignorant, then you're not really safe because you don't know what the possible complications are. Sane, when we say sane, we're really talking about being sober. You may be able to get by with being drunk or loaded with other types of sexual behavior, but if you're going to play with BDSM, you really need to be sober. And
God,
there's a lot of people
who,
they may not be clean and sober in their personal lives, but they choose to not indulge in drugs and alcohol when they're playing with BDSM. You know, they'll drink afterwards, not during. And then consensual, of course, means that it's got to be properly negotiated. And one of the things I love about the BDSM community is that those people really spend a lot of time communicating with each other. I wish vanilla people spent that much time communicating. You know, they have to sit down and say, I like this type of sex. What kind of sex do you like? Okay, would this work for you? Would that work for you? You know, this is what I'd like to do. They have to have all these conversations before they ever have sex with each other. And, you know, vanilla sex, usually people don't talk at all. You know, they just get into this wrestling match and see what happens.
Wow, that's amazing, I swear. Is there anything else in your toy kit?
Let's see. Well, of course, there's lubrication and a variety of condoms. You have to have the extra big condoms for the extra big penises. And unfortunately, they don't make extra small condoms for the extra small penises. I wish they did.
There
were a few times I could have used an extra small penis, but they just don't make them, and I'm assuming this because probably no man would buy them.
Oh.
Give me a box of the extra small.
Yeah, I'd be too embarrassed.
And then cock rings are great. You put them around the base of the penis, and it holds the blood in so that that's funny. I'm sorry, somebody just Skyped us, said, sure they do, they build them as extra sensitive. That's funny. Actually, extra sensitive condoms are thinner. Supposed to be thinner condoms, but okay, I like that. Extra sensitive. For the small guy. Put a little guy in your life. Get the extra sensitive.
Oh, geez.
Anyway. Yeah, what else do I have in my briefcase? I'm going to have to go open that sucker up and find out, but we're about out of time, actually. Can you believe that?
Already? I'm just getting started. Darn.
I know you are. I know you are. We got about, probably about 4 or 5 minutes, and then I got to sign off. But, yeah, so briefcases. This briefcase followed me around all over the United States. I used to, literally, before 9/11, it was such a different world. So before 2001, I'm flying around all over the U.S. with this briefcase. And my God, if they had ever, you know, opened it up, checked me. Got the whips and the handcuffs and the dildos and the strap-ons and, yeah. So that was interesting. I'd go into, you know, catch a plane to Chicago or New York, and I'd be wearing a pinstripe suit, look like I was getting ready for a business meeting, carrying my little briefcase, and just had no idea what was inside of there.
So, I mean, do you encounter, now that 9/11 has happened, do you encounter searches in the airport? And all
oh,
that
yeah.
Stuff,
you know what? People who do the BDSM conventions actually have to check all of that stuff, and it gets hand searched. Yeah, it's pretty involved. It's a headache. It's a headache trying to get any kind of BDSM toys through the airport nowadays. It's possible, but it's very difficult. You certainly wouldn't do carry-on. I was doing carry-on. Can you believe that?
Oh, geez. You wouldn't get by today.
No, definitely not. Well, for those of you who are listening right now, I just want to let you know, if you do have any questions that you didn't Twitter or Skype or call in today, or if maybe you tried to and somehow or another you weren't able to get through, I've been having a little bit of problems in that department. I'm not sure what all the difficulties are, but I'm getting messages after the show of people who are trying to get through. And if that's happening to you tonight, first of all, I apologize, and second of all, drop me an email, or you can call me toll-free. Unfortunately, I can't pick up my toll-free line during the show, but you can call me right after the show at 888-903-0050. That's 888-903-0050. Or you can email me at veronica@sexwithoutshame.com. That's veronica@sexwithoutshame.com. And I'll be happy to follow up and answer any questions Paul didn't ask for you tonight. And Paul, thank you so much for being such a love. On such short notice, I call you 3 minutes before the show and say, hey, Paul, you want to come out and play?
For you, Veronica, anything.
You are so sweet. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Yeah, look for my brochures. I'm gonna put them all over the little community center there in North San Juan and down at the post office, and we'll see what happens.
You will scandalize the place. But don't
miss
the senior center.
I'll try to do my best.
Okay. Thank you, Veronica.
You're gonna come back in a few weeks, right?
I'll come back whenever you want me.
I love it. Maybe 2 or 3 weeks, something like that. You come back and hit me with some more questions.
Oh, I'd love to.
All right, dear. Have a great weekend.
Thank you very much.
Night.
Bye now. Good night.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with me.